if we're going to be using a landscape that we're having, it already kind of suits condors. Mm-hmm. Or so it appears. We're still in the middle of our feasibility study. I don't want to say absolutely that that's for sure.
Right.
But it seems a logical choice.
Right. And I want to come back to some of those habitat elements in a bit. But the project certainly has gotten some good media coverage lately. Front page of the Chronicle back in August. That was sweet. What are some of the major obstacles to bringing the condor back?
Well, with the habitat suitability or the habitat, well, we're trying to essentially come up with like a habitat suitability index, and we're doing a lot of habitat analyses just to determine what's out there. 100 years is a long time, and the environment has changed. The landscape has changed. People have been here for quite a while now. We're here to stay, and we're sinking in some permanent roots. So what we really need to assess is it still suitable enough to be able to support a population of reintroduced condors? And that's on a number of different levels. The forests were quite a bit different. We don't know what the preferred nesting areas were for condors. We know that a lot of the birds that have been reintroduced into the Big Sur area are utilizing redwood trees for nesting purposes. At least half of the nests at this time have been in cavities of coastal redwoods. And we know that there were a lot of those here at one point in time, and those numbers have definitely been diminished through the timber industry. There is still quite a bit of old growth left, not if you look at it in relation to what was in existence, but as far as is there enough for condors to use for nesting, we believe that there is enough. And there, you know, there's little pockets of crags and whatnot that they could use for nesting. Looking at the prey availability, the availability of carcasses across the landscape, that has definitely declined. But like I said, some populations are recovering. There's work being done with elk. There's more cattle available at this time. And like I said, marine resources are coming back. So those are all going to be things that we're looking at and trying to assess, you know, how much is enough of all of these different resources. And then, you know, the thing that's really been holding the population back in the south, that initially when condors were taken into captivity and the idea of doing reintroductions was begun, there wasn't really a good handle on what were causing the declines in the first place. There was definitely the idea that habitat suitability was declining and that potentially there was a reduction in megafauna, but there were probably other things going on and people didn't really understand what they were. There were some indications that DDT was playing a role in reproduction in the birds, but it wasn't really until they started releasing birds from the captive breeding program and seeing what the fate of those released birds was that they really got onto some of the things. Namely, yes, DDT is a problem, and that lead toxicity was taking a very heavy toll on the birds.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to definitely have to be getting a handle on that on the North Coast as they have been in the other released areas.
My name is Ken Burton, and I'm talking with Tiana Williams and Chris West of the Yurok Tribe about the tribe's program to restore condors to the North Coast. Condors are related to the turkey vulture, which is a familiar sight in this area, and along with the raven is being used as something of a surrogate to measure lead exposure and other potential threats in the environment. What are you finding?
Well, at this point in time, our preliminary work hasn't given us as much information as we would like, and I would have to say that the jury is still somewhat out.
For sure.
Most of the success that we've had for trapping has been during the summer months when turkey vultures are more prevalent, and they do stick along the coast in the winter, and we are in the middle of our winter trapping season right now. Last winter, we got, as we phrase it, totally skunked, in that we tried for months to trap birds and had very little success at bringing birds down to carcasses.
Which is interesting because it seems like, you know, any roadkill just has vultures all over it instantly.
And especially in the wintertime when it seems that the soaring conditions are less, their ability to go out and forage is reduced because they have to wait through storm fronts coming through, and it just seems that they would really be wanting to get down to something on the ground, and it just, you know, we had birds soaring right over carcasses that we put out and not going near them. So We're trying again this season. The other thing is, maybe they were just a little bit wary, maybe what I was saying earlier about the flight conditions just not being as good and them not being willing to risk coming down to a potential walk-in trap that we had set up for them. It was just too much for them to overcome their fear to come down.
Mm-hmm. Some of the other reintroduction programs have utilized Andean condors to kind of test the waters before throwing Californias out there. Any talk of doing that here?
There's been talk of it. There's been talk of a lot of different strategies, kind of just round the campfire talk, within the condor circles. But I think really the idea now is that so many different methods have been tried with condors. There really is a pretty good understanding of methods that work and don't work. And I think probably going straight to condors themselves. And also, since we have higher numbers than we did when the program first started, when not more value was placed on the birds, but they had fewer birds to risk in the environment. At this point in time, there's more birds being produced mm-hmm. and fewer birds being released mm-hmm. and coming up with new release sites and, being willing to try out some of the tried and true methods in a new area is kind of, I think, somewhat less risky.
Yeah. And you have been testing toxicity levels in carcasses, in marine mammal carcasses. What kind of levels are you finding? They're a little cleaner than down in Southern California, aren't they?
Yeah, we're definitely finding that the marine mammals, as far as especially DDT and PCBs, are a lot cleaner along the North Coast than they are in Central California and Southern California. It's somewhat difficult to run comparisons to a lot of the work that's been done out there, but we've been plodding along, and I think we're not quite as clean as Alaska. There's been a lot of work done up there. However, no one's looking to reintroduce condors up there. So when you look at the condor range and you look at the rest of California, we're doing pretty well, I think.
Good. Now, hunters are in the ironic position of being the biggest threat and perhaps the biggest potential food provider to condors. So obviously you have to have the complete cooperation of the hunting community for this to work. You've built a hunter education program into the Condor program. How's that going?
Well, we're really just getting started. We've been engaging the hunting community as frequently as possible, but we haven't really nailed down a lot of resources to run that side of things. But we got a grant just recently from the Administration for Native Americans, and that gave us the resources to really start what we're calling our Hunters as Stewards program full force. And we're going to be engaging the community. We're going to be holding some talks. We're going to be doing shooting demonstrations where we can demonstrate to hunters the efficacy of non-lead ammunition versus lead ammunition. And we're also going to be doing ammunition exchanges where, we purchased a large amount of non-lead ammunition, and we'll be able to exchange that with hunters for lead ammunition if they want to try it out and go out and actually try and take some game with non-lead bullets.
Mm-hmm. Great. So the cover of the last issue of Eco News posed the question, will poisoning from lead bullets shoot down the Condor program? My guess is that your answer is a resounding no at this point.
Well, we're certainly hoping not. There's a lot of tradition in the hunting community, and people grow up using a certain type of ammunition, and their parents used it, and their grandparents used it, and they want to continue using it, and that's understandable. But I don't think that people should really view a switch from lead to non-lead ammunition as a break in tradition. The tradition is going out and harvesting healthy game for you and your family, and to be able to put clean and healthy food on the table. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that shooting that game with ammunition that fragments and potentially puts toxic material into the food is really the route that anyone wants to go. And I think most hunters understand that, but it's really how good is the ammunition. And I think once we get the word out and we get people to try some of the ammunition alternatives, I think that it can be something that can be brought into the hunting community, and the hunting community can not only be bringing healthy food home to their tables, but they can also be leaving healthy gut piles and remains from game that they've harvested in the field, and leave good, healthy food alternatives out there for the scavenging communities as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're almost out of time. One of the objections to pulling the last condors out of the wild back in the 80s was the loss of what some people referred to as the condor culture. That is, that the young birds needed the wisdom of the adults to learn how to survive in the environment, how to stay out of trouble, and that some of the reintroduced birds without that guidance have gotten themselves into some sticky situations. What's your take on that briefly, and how do you think we might avoid that here? Where will our reintroduced birds come from?
I think that there's definitely something to be said for that. These birds do learn from one another. They're a species that really exhibits more of a lifelong learning rather than they learn something in the nest and fledge out and go on their own. They have an extended period of time with their parents, and then they go out into juvenile groups before they settle down and get breeding territories of their own, and they're learning the whole time from those juvenile groups things that have been imparted on each of those individuals by their parents. There will be a learning curve if birds are brought into the wild up here because they're not familiar with the terrain, they're not familiar with the environment, but there is a lot of plasticity in condors. They really can adapt pretty well. And I think the idea that we're looking at, or one of the ideas, is release birds into the flocks in other areas where there are birds that are out there that are knowledgeable about the environment, allow them to learn, get their wings under them, so to speak, and really be able to survive in a wild environment, and then transfer those birds up to here. So they have a little bit of at least survival knowledge and knowledge of how to read the landscape and find food and things like that before being released into a novel environment here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly look forward to the day when I can look up and see a condor circling around over Arcata.
I do as well.
let's hope it happens. Thank you both for coming in, and good luck with the project.
Thank you so much for your time.
This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Ken Burton, and I've been your host for the past half hour. My guests today have been Chris West and Tiana Williams of the Yurok Tribal Wildlife Program. The program's website has a very long URL, but if you Google Yurok Condor, it's the first hit. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 707-826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks, as always, to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU for the Eco News Report.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Yes, it's me for 2 hours, and maybe you if you want to call in. 427-3772. We'll be discussing the upcoming support for WikiLeaks and whistleblowers protests coming up day after tomorrow at the town clock at 1 o'clock. We'll be discussing a proposal to establish a summit to consider some decent treatment of street performers instead of harassing them and driving them out of town or off the avenue or off the levee. I'll be playing some more tape from New Year's Eve and street interviews, and we'll be discussing other current issues like the attack on Father Joel Roberts and, whatever issues you may bring up that are related to civil rights here in Santa Cruz. Stay tuned.
I've been living in Los Angeles, and I haven't been singing much for ever since Chicago. So if I don't remember the words, you've got to forgive me. I wrote these songs a while ago, when I was but a kid, walking through the American wilderness. Oh, look outside the window, there's a woman being grabbed. They dragged her to the bushes, and now she's being stabbed. Call the cops and try to stop the pain. But Monopoly is so much fun, I'd hate to blow the game. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody.
the match is getting stiff. 13 cars are piled up there, hanging on a cliff. Maybe we should pull them back with our towing chain. But we gotta move and we might get sued, and it looks like it's gonna rain. With the panthers and the poor, the rats have joined the babies who are sleeping on the floor. Oh, baby, we should have da 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 da. But they've got too much already, and besides, we've got the cops, and I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Oh, there's a dirty paper using sex to make her sales. The Supreme Court was so upset they sent him off to jail. Oh, maybe we should take a stand and send the fiend a fine. But we're busy reading Playboy and the Sunday New York Times. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Smoking marijuana is more fun than drinking beer. But a friend of ours was captured and they gave him 30 years. Oh, maybe we should raise our voices, ask somebody why. The demonstrations are a drag, besides we're much too high. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Oh, look outside the window, there's a woman being grabbed. They dragged her to the bushes and now she's being stabbed. Maybe we should call the cops and try to stop the pain. But Monopoly is so much fun, I'd hate to blow the game. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends.
And that was Phil Oakes from an album, Phil Oakes Live 1968, There and Now. Oakes was one of my favorite singers the last three or four decades, has remained that. He died in 1976. And there was a special segment of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Discussing the new movie that just came out, and it's, you can download it and see people talking about Phil Oakes and see selections from the movie and some interviews and a couple of his songs. Beautiful singer, great lyrics. Wish we had, maybe we do have some folks now that I just haven't discovered who are carrying on in this tradition. I bet we do. In fact, I'm sure we do. Who knows? Maybe you might consider those of us who sing downtown about the homeless and get ticketed for it, sort of Oakes' successors, in the sense that we're trying to carry on the tradition of political singing and protesting in order to change oppressive laws and oppressive policies. Anyway, there's a protest coming up on Saturday. A protest that's the second in a series, who knows, maybe a continuing series, to free WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and political military prisoner Bradley Manning. And this is going to be at the Clock Tower, Pacific Avenue, 1 o'clock. It's mentioned on Indie Bay. It says from 1 o'clock to 1 o'clock, which can't be right because that would be no time at all. Probably run for a couple hours at least. It's a protest that Steve Argue organized. He's an activist and a writer who has been particularly interested in local civil rights activities, as well as national, international activities. And he's got some speakers lined up. Frank Runninghorse, organizer in Students for a Democratic Society, the Peace and Freedom Party, and the Oscar Grant Coalition. The dead Oscar Grant, you remember, Jr., killed by the BART police officer, Johannes Merzeli, about 2 years ago now. James Costner, professor of history. That's a Santa Cruz activist who'll be coming down from the Bay Area, where he now teaches. Bob Mioia, and I probably got that wrong, from the Berkeley Peace and Justice Commission. I'm going to be talking about possibility of a Santa Cruz WikiLeaks, although that's for a person of my technical incompetence, it would be impossible, but I like the idea. Steve Plaich will be talking. He's often my co-host. He was an unsuccessful city council candidate. He's a needle exchange worker and suicide prevention worker here in Santa Cruz. Helped organize the meals for November and December when the city and the county and the vets decided not to. The event is going to be organized by the Santa Cruz Coalition to Free Julian Assange and Bradley Manning, endorsed by Peace and Freedom, Students for a Democratic Society, the Bolshevik Tendency, the Oscar Grant Coalition, the League for Revolutionary Party, MDS, and I might add, I think Huff is also a supporter of this rally, but maybe not, maybe just some Huff members. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I work with. We meet every Wednesday and are continuing actually now hold regular meetings at the Abbey Cafe. You're invited 10:30 in the morning on Wednesday. Come on up to the cafe in the church at Mission and Highway 1. It's perched up there on the hill. You can check it out. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff coming out, not so much about Julian Assange and Bradley Manning. Assange is under house arrest and Manning is in solitary confinement. But the WikiLeaks disclosures are continuing apace, and they're really more important, frankly, than the fate of either of these two guys, because that they, whether Manley did or didn't release the cables in question that Assange's WikiLeaks is now set up to release, regardless of what happens to Assange, the issue is really the kind of corruption, hypocrisy, lying, war crimes that are exposed by these cables and that will continue to be exposed, and that is going to create, hopefully, the possibility of some real change in the world and in the United States and in across the globe where the dark shadow of the United States reaches and the U.S. military reaches. There is a brief interview on MSNBC, David Chase, who recently visited Army PFC Bradley Manning, the guy who's accused of being the whistleblower, joins guest host Jonathan Capehart to discuss Julian Assange's claim that the imprisoned soldier is a political prisoner. That's at least how they phrase it. He obviously is a political prisoner, in my view. But let's hear this mainstream, which you can also see if you go on to the video site. Oh, just look for, David Chase on MSNBC. Let's hear this interview.
$100 crisps in every.
There's a little commercial beforehand, so I will spare you the listening to the Pringles commercial. Although, actually, here we go. They're eating the Pringles. They're crunching them. Oh, it's so exciting. A lot of fun, and so forth. We're almost through the Pringles commercial. Not quite, but there we go. I think we're actually into the interview. Sorry about that, folks, but you just never know what you're going to get here on this. That video seems to be taking its time. But again, if you want to call into the show, and I encourage people to do that, 427-3772 is the call-in number. And I'm still waiting for this thing to play, which is, let's see here. There we go. It's going through the Pringles commercial again, I'm afraid. Well, it was working well earlier today. Apparently, it isn't working so well. I'm going to find something else. And until I do, I'm going to work on some of the stuff I have not been able to play. And that is, I began to play it on Sunday, and I do a show on Sunday morning for those of you who are new to this particular station or this particular program, a long show on Sunday morning from 9:30 to 1, And I began playing some interviews from the DIY parade. That's the do-it-yourself last night parade that stirred up such a controversy among the police and the mayor and the Santa Cruz Sentinel. But actually, it was just sort of an annual event that happens with some jollity and regularity. And it's a fun event. Let people come down and parade around in costumes and on stilts and with hula hoops with glitter and neon flashing lights and so forth. And it's fun. And the city has tried to stop it, saying you can't be in this parade without a permit. Last year they prosecuted Wes Modes, who originally was one of the founders of the parade, but wasn't really involved in the organization the last few years. He was convicted of parading without a permit. Of course, the other 1,000 people who walked in the parade were not ticketed, just the organizer, and we're waiting to see what's happening this year to those of us who walked in the parade. And I did some interviews, as did a number of other people. Free Radio Santa Cruz covered the parade by call-in. I was simply mostly doing audio recording for a later broadcast, which I'm now going to broadcast. And but there was a lot of coverage of it. It was quite an event. Some interesting things came off at the parade. There was no violence, of course. There was you know, incredible a number of police officers present. The chief of police, Kevin Vogel, himself showed up in all his finery. And we have an interview with him, as well as Sergeant Mike Harms, who has recently acquired some fame through cracking down on the drum circle. Apparently he's now going after having driven the drum circle away from the farmer's market, away from the parking lots near the farmer's market, away from the town clock, and away from CVS, across from CVS, the drugstore where it was kind of found a temporary refuge for a month or two, and it's now moved on to the levee path. Well, last night it was driven away from there as well. You can read about that on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, in case you want to check that out. And I will also be reading some descriptions of what went down, and maybe Drum Circle Dave, who called in the story, actually emailed me the story, which I posted on Indie Bay, will call in to talk about it. But in any case, right now I'm going to play some more from last night, DIY last night, parading on the streets without a permit, or at least we don't know. Was there a permit issued? Will anyone tell us?
Death continue. We're nearing a 6 o'clock triple fine zone time, but ironically enough, the parade, most of it, has reached the end of its route.
Yeah, but what I mean by triple fine zone is that for Halloween and New Year's, the city council, in order to deter lawbreakers, has tripled the fines on numerous offenses within a limited zone between 6 o'clock in the evening and 3 o'clock the next morning on, I believe, at least New Year's Eve and probably Halloween as well. I'm not quite sure if it's exactly this time, the same time frame. But the real question I tried to find out and couldn't was whether a particular code section, walking in a parade without a permit, was a triple fine zone violation, as Captain Steve Clark dourly and ominously warned in the Santa Cruz Sentinel articles where he was quoted. This is the same Captain Clark who afterward claimed that he saw masked marauders, people masking up, looking for an opportunity to cause trouble, and that it was only through the vigilance of his massive overtime on the police force and that of his cohorts and underlings that dangerous terrorist threat was narrowly averted. That, of course, was not the perception of most everybody else, but you got to leave it to your local police department to give us the true facts, not to mention the Sentinel and Mayor Coonerty pressing on with a similar kind of echo chamber approach. Anyway, here's more from me at the parade and interviewing a few folks.
And it looks like a substantially bigger...
What have you been seeing at the event?
Less people than last year, but more people than I was afraid would attend, because...
You could say it on the air.
Well, we're here at the end of Pacific Avenue, and so far, no arrests, no citations, but of course the police are likely to, I've been surveilling the event and do some more stuff that they will probably do off camera, but people are not, at least some people are not deterred by this.
What I mean by that, really, by off camera, is later. The police are... I think they acknowledged they were videoing the parade, and they would give the tapes to the city attorney, and he would then decide if any prosecutions were in order. since they've threatened prosecutions and since the city's special events coordinator, Kathy Agnone, specifically wrote to Elizabeth Birchfield that she would be vulnerable for a citation because it was the last day of a permit and so forth, it's quite likely that they're going to try to do this, is go after people like they did last year when they ticketed three people, Wes Modes, Whitney Wild, and Curtis Relaford. We're trying to find those of us who are concerned with defending the right of public assembly are encouraging anyone who gets a citation to get in touch with, get in touch with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I will pass the word on to other activists, or get in touch with DIY Last Night, that's an email list as well, or post your information on Santa Cruz Indie Media if you get a citation in the mail, or you hear anybody else getting a citation in the mail for this festive, completely nonviolent, non-criminal event. The real violent criminals are those who are trying to intimidate people away from this parade. That is an official and dangerous conspiracy by those in power to restrict First Amendment rights and to remove First Amendment rights, the right of assembly. They're the people who should be getting the citations, who should be dragged into court, who should be made to pay for this kind of intimidation, which did reduce the number of people in the parade significantly, I would say by a half to two-thirds. But there were still quite a number of people there, much more so than I thought there'd be. And initially when I was there, as I said earlier in the first part of this tape on Sunday, there were only 10 of us who showed up when usually there are about 100 people in the parking lot preparing. But gradually the crowd grew, people gathered courage, and they walked.
That's very good. I was almost deterred. I felt a little nervous about coming to this event, but I did, so there. And the celebrants who walked in the parade, including our friend the Snow Queen and her little consort, the princess, are planning to go home. So it looks like while there is a temporary gathering down here, it's going to be much shorter than in previous years. So
what the parade does is it walks from the Saturn Cafe all the way down to, well, in past years it's gone to the Cinema 9 and stopped there. And usually there's sort of a long period of there's a pillow fight or there's some kind of a funny event that happened. But this year, apparently people were more nervous than usual, so they just walked all the way down to the end of the avenue, Lulu Carpenter's, Jamba Juice, and then pretty quickly thereafter dispersed.
Well, see, but let me not speak too soon. Coral, have you seen any police activity?
He asked if I've seen police activity. I've seen rolling the police cars going through stops very and hiding also in alcoves in their squad cars. And I haven't seen anybody get out, but I did see a couple of security guards walking. They're standing like they're going to swing their clubs. I didn't see anything happen, though.
Nothing exciting, in other words.
I can't say anything about that. No, I didn't see a thing.
Live free or dry. What kind of a sign is that? We're looking at it. What does this mean, madam?
What
does this mean?
It means that we've made some choices, like these wars where all the civilians are done. This is peak oil, and we're living way beyond our means. There are a finite number of resources out there, and the pigs here have taken them, so we're using our tax dollars.
Well, surely you support the use of tax dollars to monitor this dangerous parade to make sure it doesn't get out of control.
Well, like an anarchist like me, No, I saw a lot of dangerous people.
So you were able to live through it?
Well, you know, the policemen were smiling. I think they're trying. You know, it's a hard job to be a cop.
Well, you know, these parade people could attack them at any point. I mean, it's a good point, don't you think?
They're having too much fun.
Well, you know, have fun one day, pick up the gun the next day. You know what they say.
Let's see. Do I know anybody here with a gun? I don't think anybody. And I know a lot of people in this parade. I don't think any of them have guns.
Well, luckily the police officers do, so they can take care of them rather quickly.
Well,
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I suppose. No, it's a shame. I heard that there was an article in the Sentinel this morning. That's why that company bought the Sentinel, was so they could really have real intelligent articles.
Oh, yeah, of course. Were you planning to come to this before you read the Sentinel article?
I didn't even read the article. I heard about it. I come every year. And, you know, I think we can walk in the streets and we can speak our minds. Actually, I was reading some Howard Zinn just yesterday about the First World War. And they made the Espionage Act so people couldn't talk. And they put them in jail when they said anything about resisting the draft.
Well, naturally, our brave French and English allies need to have a united country behind the armed forces.
The people there didn't even know their men were dying. They had no idea that there were 500,000 in this battle and 500,000 dead in that battle.
It's a sacrifice for our country. Don't you understand?
It was ridiculous. It was, it's the beginning of the kind of stuff we have now. There's nobody at this parade. That's a very sad thing. I mean, there are people. I honor every single person that is here, you know, and they're conscious of what they're doing. But it's all over the world. People are in the streets now, you know. They know this is a rotten game. They're all going to end up homeless and need your advice here soon, you know.
Well, luckily, our President Obama is still saturating Afghanistan with the appropriate technology. So,
did you read Ralph Nader's letter? He wrote a letter from George W. Bush to Obama. It's hilarious. It's excellent.
Obama.
Thank you for carrying on the good job. You've done things that didn't even occur to me to do.
Got it. And we've been talking with...
Christy.
Thank you, Christy. Some of these terrorists under cover of this crowd are engaging in frivolous sports activities when they could be at home supporting our troops. Now, what do you make of this whole thing, madam?
I can't think right now. I'm too drunk.
If my hearing were better, I would actually understood what you just said. So you are a longtime parade supporter?
I'm a civilian vet that got wronged.
Really? Tell me about that.
Oh, government. I can't. I have to tell WikiLeaks.
Do that. I want to hear more. And where's my hug?
I got to tell
you. Down here at the end of Pacific Avenue, at about 6 o'clock, as the Triple Fine Zone goes into effect, we have a juggler on stilts, a ball, a large beach ball being thrown about from person to person, and Arthur Holt Drumming Brigade is drumming away. We had an interview with him earlier, as you remember. And there's a large crowd having a good time. And a lot of kids in the crowd, although it's mostly adults. I see Bradley of Indy Media. I see, as I say, at least two people on stilts. And, of course, the ubiquitous Bob LaMonica. Bob, any further comments?
People are having a very fun time. I think it needs to be said that the people that did come out in spite of the threats and the fear-mongering and the intimidation that was put out by the local authorities.
Hear, hear. Thank you, Bob.
Fabulous turnout, and it was really wonderful to see the smiles on the faces on the people on the sidewalks. Hundreds of people on the sidewalks smiling as the parade went by. And probably at critical mass, there may have been 200 people in the parade.
Yeah, at least. I mean, it looks like more people joined the parade. And are at least staying for this brief period of time. The number of people in costumes, compared to the number of people who are still in the street here in front of Lulu Carpenter's, is it's very small, but there are a number of costumes. There's a couple of kids with costumes. There, of course, is the condom... I'm sure what she calls herself, the condom woman in blonde, mostly ordinary folks out here. Of course, then we have Coral Brune, who's reporting for Free Radio, and apparently involved with criminal organizations like HUP, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Are you a part of that questionable group?
I'm sort of an independent right now. Whoa!
There you are. Whoa, there's the ball. The ball is being bounced around. Hey, there are no balls downtown. Don't you people know the downtown ordinances?
And there is, in fact, an actual downtown ordinance which prohibits throwing a ball downtown on Pacific Avenue. It's one of the downtown ordinances passed in 2002.
What kind of a crowd is this?
Did you see Steve Argue and Jennifer?
I did.
Yeah, that's his wife's name, right?
Yeah. Being tossed around. Now, that also may be construed as a violation, I'm not kidding, folks, of the municipal code. I believe it is 9.50.020, but I'd have to check my pocket guide. Nutcracker Nick and his associate, what brings you to the parade?
Well, I'm checking up on the undercover agents, and they're very slimy. I just can't find them.
You were checking up, and you actually didn't walk in the parade, did you? You gutless wonder, you.
I crept around the side of it.
Of course.
I don't think you're conspicuous.
Didn't want to be ticketed, eh, Whitehead?
No, not me, boy.
Who's this woman with you? Your name, madam?
My name is Woman.
Keeping a low profile, eh?
Just for tonight. I want to play safe, but it's a beautiful parade that celebrates the free spirit of Santa Cruz.
And you're proud to be a member, except you don't want to give your name. Very interesting.
I'm with the Peace Coalition.
I see.
Do you have any New Year's revolutions?
End the war.
Yes. Anonymously said from the sidelines as we disappear into the background. Thank you both.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert.
We're doing a theater play under my name.
Tell me about that.
Nicholas Constant. It's called Bitter the Fruit. We're rehearsing it. It's about the rights of strawberry pickers and teachers, educators, to protect children from chemicals used in strawberries.
And again, this is a rehearsal or a performance?
No, this is going to be a performance in February.
In February. And
one of the local small theaters.
And how can people learn more about this production?
They could call me up on my number. I'll give 234-2067.
Say it again.
234-2067.
Are you still casting for this for aspiring actors?
Well, we just cast our last actor.
All right. Maybe understudies?
Under the bed study.
Under
the strawberry bed, that
undercover
is.
Undercover studies, eh? Again, we've been talking with
Nicholas Constant, theater director.
And
Susan, and we would like to say we want to end the methyl bromide, methyl iodide pesticide on the fields.
Indeed. My father was a great opponent of that. Thank you both.
And it's interesting, in the beginning of the conversation, Susan was reluctant to give her name. At the end, as we talked more, the fear dispersed somewhat and she became more open. I think that there was a similar process in terms of the parade itself and the numbers that grew, but there is a definite chill in the air here, not just the winter chill, but the chill of political repression in Santa Cruz. And that's what I'm going to pause to talk about now, as I promised I'd do in an email I put out and in a post I did on IndieBay.org. Actually, there's a story that has appeared in the Santa Cruz Sentinel online edition, which will be in tomorrow's Sentinel, called Drum Circle Struggle Pops Up Again, Police Arrest Man on the Levee After Breaking Up Group. And it's another one of J.M. Brown's atrocious is kind of strong, but it tends in that direction. It reads like a police department handout. The actual story as I got it and as I posted it, and you can find on Indie Bay, I called it, I got an email from Drum Circle Day, which described a police shutdown of the yesterday's Wednesday afternoon and evening drum circle, which had been playing on the levee path between the Soquel and Water Street bridges for the last 2 months, at least. Hot soup was being supplied to them by India Joe's restaurant. But the circle had been under surveillance by Sergeant Harms and his troops for some time. Harms had vigorously sought in the past to disperse the Wednesday drum circle for the last several years at prior locations, staking it out next to the when it was next to the farmer's market, following it to adjacent parking lots in downtown when the farmer's market just sort of expanded over it in a coup d'etat over the drum circle. And now, if this report is accurate, moving in with a new ordinance to disperse it again. Actually, it's an old ordinance that they're using, which has to do with nobody on the path after dark. You're not allowed. Citizens' rights end at sunset in Santa Cruz on the levee path for your own safety, you see. That's the ordinance, the curfew ordinance passed for all you adults who really should be kept in line and whose safety needs to be protected. And here's what Drum Circle Dave wrote. He wrote me, City Police shut down the drum circle on the levee at 6 p.m. January 5th, 2011. Sergeant Harms was the officer on the scene on foot. Along with two others that came in a police car, Harms said we could not gather on the levee after 6 p.m. under a city law. One arrest was made, a man named James. He is a drummer spending the night in jail tonight for resisting arrest. I overheard he would not show Harms identification, and Harms arrested him. And I wrote, this report, if accurate, is a gloomy New Year's culmination of a series of police harassments and attacks on the drum circle over the last few years. Most recently, the drum circle was driven away from its location on the levee across from the CVS drugstore near the Soquel Bridge, where the city cut down all the trees and shrubbery and set up no trespassing signs supposed to protect a so-called demonstration garden that they conveniently created on that spot, which is made up of wood chips. It seemed to be another instance of the city's orchestrated crackdown and assault on the DIY-style public gatherings, most famously demonstrated by the threats against the DIY Last Night Parade, which I've talked about before, and which has actually been the subject of some significant discussion in the media. Repressive city council ordinances passed by the Rotkin-Matthews Council of the 90s made it illegal to walk along the levee after dark, and one of the many city council empower the police, repress the poor downtown ordinances passed under the pretext of a safety problem. It's interesting and telling that Sergeant Harms and the SCPD are suddenly dredging up this law after taking no action in the last few months against the weekly drum circle, even though it was there after dark, on a regular basis. It's hard to believe the action didn't have the concurrence of the Coonerty Lane City Council, Mayor Ryan Coonerty and Vice Mayor Don Lane. Or at least one hasn't heard them objecting to it yet. The action also comes in the wake of renewed pressure against Father Joel Roberts' Monday meal at the Calvary Episcopal Church, which I've talked about in prior shows, which was a headliner in Monday's Sentinel. You can see Cynthia Matthews' Scrooge for the Season story on Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Media, if you want to see the Becky Johnson's take on that, which is a rather interesting and telling story. The circle typically began around 3 p.m. and lasted into the evening. Drummers and supporters of public assembly may be planning protest actions. Recently, Brent Adams, a downtown drummer, was convicted in Commissioner Kim Baskett's court with special city attorney intervention on behalf of a lawyer from the Attic firm, who is apparently annoyed by Brent's drumming in his second or third story room above, or office above, the Borders bookstore. Brent typically was drumming with Wireless, his companion, on the corner right at the New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue. Brent's right to play on Pacific Avenue is now subject to a heckler's veto, as is that of every other musician, apparently. And they're, as I've described many a time, they're using the so-called unreasonably disturbing noise ordinance to simply move people away. If they don't move away, regardless of how loudly or how softly they're playing, if a complaint comes in, they will essentially, the police will facilitate a ticket or give one themselves, seems to be the current status. And we are, some of us, three of us, are appealing citations we got and were convicted of for singing Downtown, Petula Clark's song, with homeless lyrics about a year ago in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. And I may read a bit from that appeal brief, probably on Sunday. I may not have time to do it today. Baskett and Judge Almquist made similar rulings against people singing, in the case of three singers, which I mentioned myself being one of them, of pro-homeless songs in a case that we're appealing to the Superior Court. I'm reading from this story. And then I have a long list of stories which... prior stories on Indie Bay, which describe the struggle of drum circle people to maintain the public space, to be able to do their drumming. And it's not just for them. It's for people who gather around them. It's for people who serve food there. It's for people who dance, people who walk by. It creates a kind of a free-spirited situation, which I guess people like Cynthia Matthews and Sergeant Harms just don't really go for. Anyway, an interesting sidelight to this, or possibly a new wrinkle, is an email I got from attorney Jonathan Gettleman. He's a pro bono attorney who has helped out both Anna Richardson, or Anna Banana, as she calls herself, who was targeted by the city attorney under the Sleep Not Downtown, Lest Ye Be Jailed injunction, which is now in place permanently against her and Miguel de Leon. Gettleman fought this case for 2 years, and he also unsuccessfully defended Wes Modes, the activist I mentioned earlier, who originally got together with others and was an inspiration for the DIY Last Night Parade back in 2005, and then revealed police surveillance, illegal and unconstitutional police surveillance of their group when ACLU from out of town, not our local ACLU, recovered the public records and exposed the city's collusion with spying on peaceful groups. Police Department apparently, I suspect, has never forgiven Wes Modes, and that's one of the reasons he's being targeted. The city attorney apparently is a part of that. Frankly, what seems like a conspiracy to me. Anyway, Gettleman is the admin attorney for these folks, and I discuss that online if you want to go to this story, which is a comment to the story about the drum circle being busted last night. Gettleman writes, "Just a thought, I offer this as a start of a conversation for those interested. Perhaps we should collectively organize a meeting to discuss this apparent very limited tolerance for public performance arts in downtown Santa Cruz. Maybe a special session city council meeting would be an apt forum, or something less dominated by one party to this issue, both with a professional facilitator and with abundant opportunity for participation, perhaps even a working group. It would be nice to have a single forum for a truthful conversation with interested parties appearing so we can learn each other's positions and work towards harmonizing them. The city business owners, the judiciary, the police, the performers, local rights advocates, and the general public all have a stake in this issue. Without choosing sides, it just seems fundamentally unfair that a certain group of more affluent or at least less performance-inclined citizens seemingly have the power of law enforcement on their side almost exclusively to facilitate their agendas. This legitimate issue of the balance between the need for and the enforcement of local behavior laws versus respect for the spirit of the rights embodied in the First Amendment is not something that should be resolved by one side with less political power being cited, quietly whisked off to jail, and dumped into overcrowded courts. It is of no benefit to our criminal, to our overcrowded court system to be to the accused, to the aggrieved, or to open public discourse for these matters to be resolved on an individual basis in a criminal justice system that was not designed to resolve or facilitate legitimate local social debate. Thank you for your consideration of my thoughts. Please feel free to forward these on to others who you believe may be interested. I encourage and welcome any additional thoughts on the matter. Sincerely, Jonathan Gettleman, who has an office over on River Street, and a phone number and so forth in the phone book. And I added, got any thoughts on Jonathan's proposal or yesterday's crackdown, and invited people to tune in to this show. So if you're tuning in, you want to call in and make a comment, you have your thoughts on this, about this proposed dialogue, about the crackdown yesterday, about the police enforcement against drummers, about musicians downtown. Well, somebody is giving a call. Let's see what's cooking. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Oh, dear.
Hey, Rob, what's going on?
That
man?
Sounds like that's you're the man causing all the trouble, Drum Circle Dave, aren't you?
I just got caught in between all of the jacks out there. You know, there was Jack this, Jack that, Sergeant Harms, Jack in the Drum Circle, and we were all just a bunch of jacks getting jacked.
Well, you know,
by the local authorities.
Have you been listening,
Santa Cruz.
Dave? Have you been listening to the show, or have you?
No, I just tuned in because I was on the computer trying to get stuff mailed to people. Yeah, but I just got off, and I'm. And
well,
now
I don't
I'm
know
here.
If you, I don't know if you read the story in the Sentinel. It's a pretty nasty story by J.M. Brown, in my view. I wrote, of course, I posted your email, and I also posted Jonathan Gettleman's letter, which you probably
read. I just kind of went over that just a moment ago, just to kind of get a gist of what he's trying to say.
Uh-huh. What do you think?
Well, as long as, like, we can all, like, show up, you know, in some way, shape, or fashion, and address this issue to the local constable authority.
You like it?
Then that would be okay, you know. But I mean, well, as far as like where we're going to go with it and how we're going to get them to calm down and.
Yeah, those are important issues. In fact, my general thought, and I sent an email off to Gettleman saying, you know, you can't these merchants won't come to the table, these police won't come to the table, or if they come to the table, they won't have anything they're really, really willing to trade unless you have some power. And that requires doing some organizing in the first place, like a street performers guild that we tried to do last summer and has been done in the past and has had some success, or a broad coalition of groups who want to restore civil liberties in Santa Cruz.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do feel a little safer with Tom Noddy just being around, you know what I mean, with the thing going on. But, I mean, we have no real protection out on the street.
And for those who don't know, Tom Noddy was one of the activists who 30 years ago, actually 31 years ago, put together with a group of street performers the Street Performers Voluntary Guidelines. Unfortunately, those were destroyed by the city council in 2002, and in their place we have laws that criminalize people after an hour at the behest of the police or of a heckler. And that's one of the problems we have. So I don't know. Tom Noddy is, of course, you know, a famous figure. He's a longtime activist. He also is a world-famous bubble performer. But, you know, he's only one person, and the fact that he's around isn't going to mean much unless the rest of us are organized. And although I just got an email from him, so maybe he has got something he wants to add to this discussion.
He's online.
Yeah. You know, but what I'm saying is, and I shouldn't probably give too much attention to it, Dave, but this story in the Sentinel will come out in tomorrow's paper. Drum circle struggle pops up again. Just is full of quotes from the police department, similar to what Brown did with the DIY last night parade, quoting about the dangers and Sergeant Clark warning, or I should say
so
Captain Clark warning.
So when do you think this hit the presses, Rob?
What's that?
This story, did this hit like today? Was that in this morning's paper?
No, that's in the online edition of the Sentinel, which will come out tomorrow morning.
So they got it in tonight.
Yeah, it's in tonight. If you look online on the Santa Cruz Sentinel, you'll see a story by J.M. Brown. I'll read a little bit of it to you. Police responded to complaints about drug and alcohol use inside a drum circle on the San Lorenzo River levee, arrested a 63-year-old man Wednesday night after he refused to leave. Now, let me stop right here. Did you observe, and be candid with me, was there drug and alcohol use in that circle? And you were there between 3 and 6 yesterday, right?
I saw no alcohol use, and I did not see a policeman grab a bottle of alcohol and say, "Ah, gotcha, James, DUI or public intoxicant," or no, there was nothing like that. He just didn't, he left his ID at home or something, and he was like, no, I don't want to show you my identification just because...
But I mean, I'm talking about I'm talking
drum.
Right, what I'm talking about is the pretext used by the police here, or
yeah.
The reason, if you want to be generous, is that there was a complaint about alcohol or drug use. Now, drugs, people smoke marijuana quite regularly at the drum circle at different times, and it's kind of isolated from everybody else. It's not in people's face. It's on the levee, you know, and it's there. But was there, did you see people shooting up? Did you see people sniffing cocaine or meth?
No, like when he emailed me, I was like, kind of like saying, hey, now look, you know, you're talking about people having alcohol. Santa Cruz has got bars all over the place, liquor stores, anywhere you can go and buy alcohol. It's not a passerby on a street corner or whatever that you can claim is at the drum circle drinking a beer.
Well, what about did you see anybody engaging in behavior that was violent or abusive or disturbing to you in any way?
No, just music. I mean, if that's disturbing.
Well, another claim the police department makes in the story is that you guys, the drum circle, was blocking the sidewalk.
I was asked to move my chair off of the levee. I was sitting on a chair.
Were people able to walk using the pathway, or were you blocking the pathway with your chair?
Yeah, they couldn't get their car by till I moved the chair.
So but could they walk by? It's not normally a car.
He walked right up to me and said, "You need to move this chair."
And
you mean move it like 2 feet? And he was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Well, okay."
So you did move your chair. Did anybody refuse to move?
No one refused. Whatever they wanted us to do to get off of the path, we did. But that wasn't good enough at that point. Once they got us off the path, then they just proceeded to, repress?
Did they order you all to leave? They ordered you to disperse, probably.
One officer yelled out, "I told you to stop," which that was the first time I heard stop.
So they ordered you to stop drumming.
But he yelled, you know.
and
so they ordered you to stop. They ordered you to stop drumming.
Right, our drums could not hurt as loud as he screamed.
Now, who were the officers involved in this activity?
Harms and a new, like, he looks like a Hawaiian officer, very good build.
Hmm.
You know, kind of like a...
Okay, and who else?
The A-team guy, the black guy.
Yeah, who else?
And then just another white-looking officer, maybe Schoen or what, Schoenfeld or...
Well, Schoenfeld is a female...
Brother,
Schoenfeld is a female officer.
Yeah, but he kind of looked like her, so
I see.
I got to say. Maybe.
All right, so the only one you recognized was Sergeant Harms, right?
Exactly, and he was on foot doing the deputy dog routine.
Well, let me read you a little more of the story and get your reaction, okay?
Okay, go ahead, man. Shoot, Rob.
The confrontation marks the latest, this is J.M. Brown writing, in tomorrow's Sentinel, the latest between police and drum circle participants who formerly occupied a downtown parking lot adjacent to the weekly farmer's market. The group moved temporarily to another lot on Cedar Street after the market expanded and then reappeared on the levee after pressure from police, business owners, and other community members pushed them out of downtown. When police arrived around 5:25 p.m. Wednesday, there were about 50 people gathered with backpacks and bikes blocking the levee pathway used by pedestrians and bicyclists, police spokesman Zach Friend said Thursday. Officers asked participants to move along because they were obstructing the path and occupying a park after nightfall. I love that, a park, when it is considered closed. Occupying, that is a small part of it. Most departed and no drugs or alcohol were located, Friend said. But James Mattson of Berkeley was arrested and taken to county jail after refusing multiple times to leave. He also would not provide identification or sign a citation for being in the park after hours, Friend said. After officers later found his identification, he was released with a citation and not booked into jail, Friend said. Police have made arrests and issued numerous citations against the drum circle in the past several years, even as group members argue they have the right to peaceably assemble and play music. The group often played for several hours, drawing complaints about noise, substance abuse, and camping, and since moving to the levee have been warned by police multiple times about smoking, drinking, and being in the park after hours, Friend said. If people are respectful of the levee, are not blocking the path, and not breaking the law, there is no need for others in the community to complain or for us to respond, Friend said. Unfortunately, there are a small group of people that seem to approach this as an entitlement issue and draw the line in the sand over something our agency would rather not have to deal with. But Wednesday's incident prompted civil rights attorney Jonathan Gettleman, who has represented homeless people prosecuted for violating the city's overnight camping ban, to propose to host a forum on respecting street performers. Without choosing sides, it just seems fundamentally unfair that a certain group of more affluent or at least less performance-inclined citizens seemingly have the power of law enforcement on their side almost exclusively to facilitate their agendas, Gettleman wrote in an email. Mayor Ryan Coonerty said the city has already engaged with the drum circle supporters about their freedom to assemble and the city's rules about street performance, and he doesn't believe further meetings are needed.
I don't know about Coonerty being helpful in our life here. He's trying to sound like he's Jesus Christ walking down a fine little rope there. Coonerty don't support no drummers. I can tell you that, Rob.
What we are trying to balance here...
I think he's got a friggin' double aught 30 looking at all of us wondering why
yeah.
he can't pull the trigger.
What we're trying to balance here is to make sure our public spaces, as Coonerty talking, are not dominated by one group. You know me, like the police, maybe. Coonerty said...
Oh, Mr. Coonerty, man, your police are dominating us, man. They are almost to the point of total abuse. I mean...
All right, well, anyway,
say,
so what's
here
your...
Here they come.
So what's your reaction? Also, you're quoted at the end of the story. You're quoted, David Derrick, 50, one of the Wednesday Drum Circle attendees, said the city's response has been an overreaction. We're not out there doing anything wrong, he said. No one is being knifed, stabbed. They're trying to push us all the way out, and we're not in the way in it to be out of it. We're in it for our own interests as free beings. That's the quote you got. And Coonerty is also quoted as saying, with this particular drum circle, there is a pattern of, with illegal activity. So it sounds like Mayor Coonerty doesn't much like you guys.
So he is going off of a microcosm, which I explained to Brown. I said, that is a small little microcosm that you're looking at there, Mr. Coonerty.
this is some little elf walking up saying some bigoted sleight of hand things about the drum circle. There were all kinds of people that would show up at the drum circle, and none of them would ever be, I'm never coming back, or this is wrong, or come right up to someone and, you know.
Well, you know, Dave, what I noticed in this article is, first of all, it's all a bunch of quotes from Friend and Coonerty.
Yeah.
And there is one small quote from you and one from Gettleman, but it's mostly a police department kind of handout. And the claim is there were complaints about drug and alcohol use, but they didn't find any drug and alcohol use. And what they did was they accused... Wait a minute. Hold it. Wait a minute.
If there was drugs and alcohol there, then damn it, why didn't they confiscate any?
Yeah, Dave. Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly, Dave. And what they also did was they also claimed you were obstructing the path, and you've just told me that while there was...
That wasn't good enough.
You told me that there was a request, you know, that you do that, and then you did it, right?
Well, of course we did. They drove the car by, and then they stopped further down the path and came back and just said, you guys are out of here.
Wait a minute. Let me understand. So they drove the car by, so they weren't obstructed, so they were able to get by, but then they claim and they came back.
They stopped the car, and the two cops got out, and Harms was already there asking James for his identification, and James
Why did he single out James specifically? Do you know?
I don't really know. I can't really give you that clue. He had just shown up. He had not even played his drum.
Now, it was James, it says in the story, and you told me that James declined to leave. Is that true?
James declined to show the policeman his identification because he just couldn't find it. I thought he was looking through his pocket.
Did he agree? Was there a problem? They claimed that, not that I think he should have to leave, but did he refuse to leave?
No, I mean, he was asked a question to find his ID, so he was trying to find it, and then Harms told him, well, if you can't find it in 30 seconds, I'm going to place you under arrest.
Are those his exact words?
Yeah, I mean, he gave him a time limit to find his identification, and then when he couldn't find it, man, pow, you know, they screwed him down into the car. Yeah, they did, man.
Well,
and
Dave,
right before he got in the car, he says, what are my charges out loud, and, you know, one officer said, I don't know if it was Harms or whoever, but he said resisting arrest. And he was like, I'm being charged for resisting arrest. How is that a problem with no identification?
Well, it sounds like if that was the case, that certainly wasn't what the Zach Friend...
Is it more money?
That wasn't what Zach Friend told the actual... that's not what Zach Friend told the Sentinel, and... That he was released. If he was being held for resisting arrest, that's a more serious charge. So it sounds like that was a. If your account is accurate, then
they put him in the car. I didn't see him struggling or anything, man. They just shoved
but
him
you
on
did,
in there.
But you
like
did. You did hear. You did hear them say that he was being arrested, and he said he was being arrested for resisting arrest.
Yeah, he yelled it out in the air. Yeah, he was resisting.
What about
arrest.
The police? Did they say that as well? Or you just heard him say that.
I heard him say that.
Okay.
That I'm being charged for resisting arrest.
Well, what I note is, I mean, you've been a part of the drum circle pretty regularly over the last few months.
Fight or anything. He's a little guy, man.
No. You yourself have been a part of the drum circle pretty regularly for the last few months.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And my question for you is, does the drum circle hang out after dark regularly?
Well, we hang out for, you know, till it gets cold. I mean, it was getting pretty cold. We were going to close it down, like, within moments, but the cops just... came to shut it down instead.
And do you intend to show up next week and continue drumming?
Well, we're going to try. I mean, you know, not unless they want us to come back to the farmer's market and try. I mean, that'd be a kind of cool thing to do, but, you know.
I'm not sure I understand you. Do you mean that you're going to come to the levee? You're going to go to the farmer's market and try it there?
Well, I mean, we got eyes on the farmer's market. You know, I mean, we do, you know.
Huh.
We're watching that little mandala under those trees. It's, you know, right there by Lulu's where they set up. But,
Lulu Carpenter's, the coffee shop, has placed its little tienda, its little store right where you used to do the drum circle in front of that big tree at the farmer's market.
Yeah, there's two trees, and there's a little sidewalk that's kind of broken. There's a mandala in there. It's got a peace signs in there and stuff.
So there's a chance you think that the drum circle may reform next to the farmer's market?
Well, I mean, if we can't do that, we're going to go try 3rd Street down a little bit farther down the levee.
I see.
so we can get out of harm's jurisdiction and maybe get some sheriff's action going on or something.
Well, Dave, by the
arson and all that.
I remember if you don't stand up for your rights, you can you'll fall down for anything. What's it? Easy to say, I guess.
At Adams, you know, I mean, we're on it. You know, there's some people, Wren, and I know Wes is on all this, but somewhere, he's like a James Bond. But anyway,
did anyone have a video camera, or did anybody have a cell phone with a camera capability? Because that's really what you need. You want to document what these police are doing. I've kind of told you this before. I think that's a good thing to do. And maybe now, if you guys do assemble again next week, as I sort of hope you will.
Oh yeah, we're gonna. But, you know, I mean, hey, like, all you got to do is just walk out to the levee and you can't miss us. You know,
what I'm saying is if you document what goes on, then you have a record of what's happened and they can't make false claims about what's happened.
Right.
Yeah, so it's good to do that if you can find someone. But you really have to kind of organize it in advance or agree that it's going to happen, have somebody have some kind of a camera or whatever with them, so they can. It doesn't have to be a camera. I mean, cell phone has. Some cell phones have that capability. Anyway, we've been talking with Drum Circle Dave, who is just
and Robert Norse of Pirate Radio 101.1 FM, Santa Cruz.
For sure, and you are, of course, you've written about in an email to me the arrest of James and the dispersal of the Drum Circle yesterday. People can check out that story on IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz. Thanks, Dave. Anything else?
Yeah, that's about it, Rob. Doing a great job. Thank you for getting the word out. Thank you, all you people that I'm just spamming all over the place with this news on Facebook and all that. I hope you all, you know, can deal with me somehow.
And if Drum Circle Dave, you decide to have a meeting of people concerned about this issue who want to have a specific plan for next Wednesday, let us all know.
Yes, I mean, I'll try to on Facebook, you know, I'll try to say, you know, we're going to try to go right where we were and, you know, back to the same place.
Okay.
Grannies, Wes, you know, you guys know, you know, we were kind of scheduling for 1 o'clock and that was about it on that.
All right, well, thank you, man.
Wednesday, yeah. Hey, peace.
Bye-bye. And I guess what Dave's talking about when he says grannies is the Raging Grannies, which is an elderly group of singers on political subjects who shows up to sing at political events and has never, as far as I know, been ticketed, unlike we Huffsters who have gotten tickets and are still fighting them in court. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Call in if you'd like, 427-3772, 427-3772.
This next song is my apology for moving to Los Angeles, which intrigues me like a beautiful, sensual morgue. Now, I don't remember the words to these songs, I don't think. At least one verse, but on Poetry and Song, one of the first songs I wrote was off setting a poem to music, was Edgar Allan Poe. Certain poems are really songs in disguise. Poe wrote a poem called The Bells, based a lot on the sound of words, and I'll do what I can remember of what I wrote 6 years ago, the idea of melody. So. Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a tale of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keep in time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme. From the chant and adulation that's so musically well. From the bell, bell, bell.
Through the dances and the yells and the rapture that impels. How it dwells on the future, how it tells. Turn the swinging and the ringing of the molten golden bell. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sword of brunic rhyme. Turn the chant in adulation and so musically well.
That was a very abbreviated version of Phil Oakes' song, The Bells. Boy, this does not sound like the best Phil Oakes album I've heard. He doesn't remember his own lyrics. I've got to be a little more scrupulous. This is the only one I could find, though. Anyway, phone lines are still open, 427-3772, if you'd like to call in. I'm going to get back to some of those New Year's Eve discussions and parade chat that I was doing with people on the streets and interviews. And of course, your phone calls if you call in. Also, City Council meets for the first time of the new year on Tuesday. There's a meeting at 3 o'clock and a meeting at 7 o'clock. Oral communications, the period of time when you actually get to talk about issues like the ones I'm talking about on the air that never appear on the agenda, Ryan Coonerty's claims notwithstanding about these issues have been discussed with the drummers. I have no such understanding that that's happened, certainly not recently. Boy. What a stonewaller. Normally, oral communication has been split between the 3 o'clock session, which 10 minutes usually at the beginning of 3 o'clock session, and then the evening session, when there is an evening session, for there to be then 20 minutes at the beginning of the 7 o'clock at the evening session. Often what happened under Rotkin's reign and Coonerty's and Matthews and Coonerty's before is that they would eliminate the evening session and cram it all into the afternoon session, in which case there would be a half an hour of oral communications at 3 o'clock. Now, what's happened instead, and I find this rather interesting, is the agenda for Tuesday specifies that there will be oral communications, even though there are two sessions, at one point at 5:30 p.m. on council meeting days. That's what I just heard from Tom Graves in an email. He's the interim city clerk, and he should know. So that means if you want to speak at oral communications, I guess this has its upside and its downside, you won't be able to come at the beginning of the meeting, either the 7 o'clock or the 3 o'clock meeting. You will have to come at 5:30 in the afternoon. Now, I guess this will allow working people to come at 5:30, and that's certainly an advantage if they want to speak at oral communications. The disadvantage is it'll be at the end of the meeting, so there'll be virtually nobody left in the audience to hear except the city council members. And, in fact, the end of the meeting is the least desirable time to speak, and, in fact, is where the Board of Supervisors puts all the oral communications people that didn't get to speak in the first half hour or hour of oral communications. The Board of Supervisors is the county legislative body. It has a policy of allowing people to speak for 3 minutes at their board. But everybody gets to speak, not just there's not a limited period of time for 30 minutes. There's a limited period of time for the beginning of the Board of Supervisors meeting, which is, I believe, at 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm not sure if it's 30 minutes or half an hour or an hour. I think it's probably 30 minutes. But all the rest of the oral communication is then moved ahead to the end of the meeting. And anybody who wants to wait that long can speak. But it's clearly the least desirable position. So for Coonerty, who's our mayor, who sets the agenda, who makes these rules, to put oral communications now at 5:30 does have a deleterious effect. It means that nobody in the public, unless they're specifically coming for the next to the last item on the agenda or to hear oral communications, is going to be there to hear the oral communications. It's a way of discouraging people, I would think, from speaking at oral communications. It's not clear. He might claim he has other reasons, like, I don't know, saving staff time or cutting back. If you cut back on public comment, well, you're saving staff time. You see, the staff doesn't have to stay there for so long. Isn't that wonderful? Except that the staff is supposed to be serving the community, and the community is served by having public and oral communications regularly and in a meaningful way so there can be some kind of dialogue and discussion of these issues and not have to resort to protest marches in the street and so forth. And not make some people feel they have to run around breaking windows and things of that sort. So, you know, it would be nice if there were actually a public dialogue time at a reasonable time with a reasonable interval, and that the time that Coonerty has taken away from public comment, which he's done through a variety of devices, and the other repressive tactics used by the Santa Cruz City Council to cut short speakers, and there is a whole laundry list of them, which I intend to make really explicit and clear online, if you want to follow my writings on Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Media, that would be great if that could be changed around and if we could restore some public comment time, and we could also establish some broader guidelines for public comment. I know that the city has spent over $125,000 trying to shut me down in a lawsuit where they couldn't have me. They had me arrested, falsely arrested, for that mock Nazi salute after they shut down a couple of other speakers repressively and very silently. I raised my arm to indicate a kind of a silent signal. You're acting like a bunch of Nazis. They had me arrested and jailed and so forth, and the DA wouldn't take the case. And so we sued them. We wanted them to change their rules. We wanted them to, you know, stop these policies, change the decorum rules, apologize for what they did, maybe provide, who knows, some small amount of money as a for some false arrest thing. Or my primary concern was changing the rules of city council decorum and making the city council actually a more tolerable, if not more welcoming, place for critics, because it's always a tolerable and welcoming place for people who aren't critics. You know, they've got the backing of the bailiffs, the backing of the sergeant at arms, the backing of the city council. It's the First Amendment isn't there for people who are saying things that everyone wants to hear. The First Amendment is there for people who are saying things that nobody wants to hear, or that certainly the people in power don't want to hear. Anyway, we are now in a position where the city essentially has been told by the Ninth Circuit Court that they can't do what they've done. They can't have me arrested for doing that. They have to go to trial and possibly pay a whole bunch of money. And now's the time for them to try to settle up and stop this before they spend more money. But they aren't doing that. And I don't see that the Coonerty regime is about to do that either. Although I've suggested it to Councilmember Byers, and I mentioned it to Bruce Bratton, a columnist, and it's been suggested, actually, everywhere along the road, we've suggested change the rules, pay off the attorney's fees, you know, pay off a certain amount of money, and let's stop this endless time and money-consuming battle. And also, it consumes our civil liberties, because what the city council is really defending is the right to repress. And that is simply not good for any of us. Anyway, oral communications at the city council on Tuesday will be at 5:30, according to Tom Graves, the city clerk. So if you want to talk about something that isn't on the agenda, you got to show up at 5:30. And you'll have 3 minutes, or maybe 2 minutes, depending on what Herr Coonerty wants to do. And I'm somewhat sarcastic about the mayor, because I've seen Ryan Coonerty in action in past council meetings, and it is not a pretty sight in terms of how he treats the public and the right to speak at oral communications. He made some comments in an editorial about he wanted expanded public comment and longer meetings at night and so forth. But when he was mayor, he had more meetings in the afternoon and less meetings at night. Well, maybe he's learned a lesson on that one, and that certainly would be good. The other thing that's coming up is a specific consent agenda item that talks about taking the money that would normally go to a community service officer, which is a uniformed police officer who is, I guess he's not officially a sworn officer. He wears light blue instead of dark blue, but presumably they have a certain amount of training. And give that money instead to the goon squads, the first alarm, or we call them false alarm, security guys who wander around on the avenue telling people, don't sit here, don't sit there. Oh, you're a poor person with a dog, go away. Oh, you're smoking, you get a ticket, that sort of thing. Those are the guys who are now going to be paid by the city out of city funding. Previously, this money was kind of given by the Downtown Association, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But, of course, it looks like the Downtown Association is merging with the city council here. Now, I haven't examined this as closely as I should. Maybe I'm making an error in some of this. I hope I'm not. But that's the other item on the agenda that attracted my attention. Now I want to get back to the tape from the DIY last night parade that was very successful, in spite of the attempts of the mayor, the police department, and the Sentinel to cast fear and doubts on the whole thing and to discourage people from coming.
Man about beer, Uncle Dennis. Dennis, you're a free radio broadcaster who every week presents a new kind of ale for what ails you. What ale is coming up this next Thursday?
Well, it's hard to tell. I usually pick out my ale on the way to the studio, but I do accept gifts. So if somebody wanted to donate an ale to From the Cream to the Dregs, that's certainly something that's I'm open to.
And that is a show that happens every 8 o'clock on Thursday nights?
You should know, Robert. How many years have I been throwing you out of the studio?
We don't want to get into that at this time. But how do people get their, ale offerings to you?
Just email UncleD@freakradio.org, and we can make arrangements to pick it up.
You drunken slut.
I don't deny it. I'm probably Santa Cruz's only on-air beer slut.
Luckily, you have an umbrella against the non-existent rain.
Well, no, this is to ward off the shit that comes from above.
Really?
Yes.
You mean from all around us?
Yes, yes. All the acid rain, air pollution, radioactive fallout.
This is your way of protesting.
Police abuse.
Let's not get Norse-ish on us, please, all right?
Well, I mean, we have to say the word police, homeless, and abuse at least once in your presence.
I suppose I should thank you for
you
that.
You deserve that.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. Uncle.
Now, how's your experience been in the last night parade tonight?
Well, if I had a clear memory of the ones before, it would be better. But I had a distinct impression, as I keep repeating on this tape, that it was much bigger in past years. But people seem to be enjoying it. There, at least one woman has regretted that the police action has, and the Sentinel's coverage and the mayor's statements have reduced the size of the parade.
That's your typical municipal scare tactics, trying to turn Santa Cruz into something that it isn't. I mean, this is the town of the weird, the wild, and the freaky.
It was, anyway. I notice people are, even the people who are here, are reluctant to give their names because, in fact, we are now in a triple fine zone after 6 o'clock at night. In theory, all these people who are in the street could be ticketed with parading without a permit, myself included, actually.
Well, only I am unsure as to whether the parading without a permit falls under the triple fine. There's only certain municipal ordinances that applies to.
And we would know that if only the city had bothered to put those on the website where it usually falls. When you get a city council meeting that passes a resolution, normally you can then go to that site and find out what the resolution says. But for some reason, that's not up there. I'm not saying there's a conspiracy.
Well, they're so low on funding, they can't post things on the website anymore. You'll find out in court when the bailiff reads off your charges.
Good. I mean, the money is needed for police overtime and other things that are more important.
Well, actually, I was surprised at the underwhelming police response tonight. Maybe the riot police are waiting in the wings, but I only saw a few of uniformed officers about, and there are are a couple of the first alert people hanging around with their radios.
First attack people? False alarm?
False alert, yeah. False alarm, whatever. Yeah. Whatever corporate cops they've hired to be down here. And of course, we can never tell who the undercover agents are. I'm sure they're out here.
Sometimes they carry umbrellas and beers.
No, I'm only under an umbrella. I'm not undercover.
Well, we'll have to presume that's the case for the moment. I don't see any city council members in this parade, or any politicians for that matter.
Well, there's former politicians here.
Like who?
Well, he was marching in the parade, so I'm reluctant to give you the name of a former candidate for city council.
Well, candidates are not former politicians.
The first name of Steve.
Ah, yes. Well, I think we've seen a number of Steves around here.
Yes.
And perhaps we'll see a number more, actually.
I have seen no other candidates or council people here, but as I mentioned on the air earlier when I was giving an update over Free Radio Live, that there are quite a number of activists here who have been activists in Santa Cruz for many, 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 many years, and it's really good to see the old-timers out here marching along and doing their thing. The only person that I haven't seen here who I really expected to see here was Wes Modes, but...
I saw him on the sidelines watching, or at least I told he was on the
sidewalk.
He was on
the sidewalk, an illegal place to stand?
Well, no, it's illegal to stand on the sidewalk as long as you don't sit near a building.
Well, I did not see him, so...
I didn't either. Anyway, thank you, Uncle Dennis, and we'll see you
on Thursday, Robert.
Of course.
Unless you're at the meeting on Sunday.
Who knows? I may show up at one of the secret Free Radio meetings.
Feliz
Navidad.
No, it's not Navidad. It was Feliz Cumpleaños.
Good point. Whatever.
We had the Navidad.
We did.
Nuevo año, that is. Año nuevo.
Año nuevo en español.
Feliz
gracias. Feliz nuevo año. Yeah.
And, boy, a couple of Spanish illiterates struggling with the language. I have finally been able to access the November 23rd resolution at City Council, which does establish triple fine zones for New Year's Eve after 6 o'clock downtown. And the 10.65, which is parading without a permit, is not covered in those triple fine areas, contrary to what Captain Steve Clark was quoted as saying in the Santa Cruz Sentinel by that fearless reporter J.M. Brown, who gave us the recent drum circle peril narrowly averted by the police rushing in to stop the non-existent alcohol and drug abuse and to establish a curfew for those irresponsible adults who were foolish enough to be out after dark on the path and blocking the path, but apparently not so much so that the squad car couldn't drive past. Interesting kind of analysis, if you believe Drum Circle Dave's approach. Anyway, according to this resolution, the safety enhancement zones included 6.12 solid waste, 6.75 graffiti. These are triple fines for these code violations. 9.12 possession of an open container or consumption of alcoholic beverages in public places. Chapter 9.20, defacing the sidewalks. I'd say chalking on the sidewalk is how it's being interpreted. Chapter 9.28, discharge of firearms. I haven't ever heard anybody being accused of that one. Chapter 9.36, noise control. I was found guilty of singing, and that was a violation of that ordinance. Chapter 9.50, conduct on public property. You know, that's when you, sit near a bench. That's when you sit near a building. That's when you sit on a bench for more than an hour. That sort of thing. That's serious stuff. 9.60, trespassing. 10.12, traffic regulation obedience. So presumably everybody could be getting tickets, although I think it was before 6 o'clock when people crossed Laurel Street, some of them possibly against the red light. And then there was a fireworks, another chapter violation, and then vehicles parking, standing, and stopping. So apparently Captain Clark was in error in his statement to J.M. Brown. Captain Clark in error. What a concept. Or shall we say, business as usual for the police department. Anyway, here's more from the DIY last night tapes.
And still wheeling about on his bicycle is Grant Wilson with Alan the Sitar Man in a what looks like a mobile, oversized wheelchair. And Brent Adams is holding up a large anarchist puppet in a disrespectful sneer at the paranoia. Over to the side, I see Sergeant Harms chatting with Becky Johnson. I'd better go check this out as a dedicated cop watcher, and we'll see what the deal is. So, Becky, have you gone undercover with this police officer here?
Yes, I'm reporting that there are dozens of people in the streets right now to Sergeant Harms. He's wishing me a happy new year.
You pay more attention when she's talking than when I talk. Well, you're totally ignoring me.
He's interrupting our conversation. Here's the man who complains I'm rude.
Exactly. I was interrupting you.
And, of course, that voice is that of Sergeant Michael Harms, in case you don't recognize it. The other is, of course, me.
Basically, prove a point.
Why aren't you ticketing these scofflaws? They're in the middle of the street. Well, I want to see you with your ticket book. They're just continuing to violate the law. Come on, man.
I know it. You should go and talk to them. Let them know what they're doing is not safe.
I need an official voice. Why don't you step out there and tell them
I've already said it many times.
So. Not tonight. You haven't.
How do you know what I've done? You haven't been with me all night.
Well, I didn't hear a megaphone saying.
No, I didn't hear it. I've heard nobody else. So, Sergeant Harms, if that's true, certainly you aren't afraid to step out and say it again.
This is an unlawful assembly.
That's not Sergeant Harms. That's Becky. John,
but she's like a puppet for me right now.
I see.
So, Sergeant, we've been talking about over here for the last, like, 10 minutes, is that she was going to be my voice the rest of the night.
We know that last year you ticketed Curtis Relaford, and I understand Whitney Wild and Westmoe's also got citations. What about this year? Are you planning to do some tickets later, perhaps?
Actually, that's not accurate. I did not cite anyone last year. Just your puppet did.
And the sergeant is being called away.
No one was cited at all. Somebody went over the video and found those.
I look over video all the time.
Recognize those names, and then the attorney sent the citations in the mail.
I did write a report last year of things that I observed personally, and I also did review video, but I didn't make any identifications from those videos.
However, you did have a contact with Curtis Relaford because I witnessed that contact.
Yes, I did have contact with Curtis Relaford.
And he was one of the people cited for walking in the parade.
Not that I know of.
No, he was driving his truck. His vehicle.
I stand corrected.
That's what it was.
Let's put it this way.
I believe the situation was.
How many citations do you expect will issue from this criminal event?
I was hoping to get an answer from you.
Sergeant Harms is declining to give us a straight answer. Sergeant, again...
I can't speak for it. I don't know.
You don't. So far, you've given out no citations.
Only one man.
Have you given out any citations?
I have not issued a citation.
Why not? There's being law-breaking going on here. Where's the permit, man?
I don't know. I'm still waiting for somebody to provide the permit for me so I don't have to go down that road. Maybe someone got a last-minute permit that
That's what I was hoping.
I need to check on that before I could do any...
But afterwards, you'll check the video and do the ticket to the site.
Make sure that no permit was issued at the last minute.
And heads will roll.
I don't know about rolling heads.
Also, I noticed violations of the downtown ordinance. A ball was being tossed around in the middle of the crowd. How could you permit that to happen downtown?
A lot of things happen without permission.
But not when vigilant officers are on the beat.
The juggling is legal.
Juggling is legal. They were juggling large balls.
No walking downtown. No walk. Listen, the sergeant here may...
Walking's fine. You can walk all your
time. Happy New Year, Mr. Brett.
I can limp.
Any comments about the parade, Bruce?
I missed it. I got down there at 5:30.
This is Bruce Bratton, who has a column... I guess it's brucebratton.org or some such thing. He used to be columnist for the Santa Cruz Weekly when it was called the Metro Santa Cruz. Never had much to say about homeless civil rights, but he did have a lot of concern about, he was against development, and he was a supporter of the progressive faction, so-called, in the Santa Cruz City Council. Always kept a safe distance from me, and he was primarily as famous as a movie reviewer, but here you hear us talking about other issues.
I got down there at 5:30 like Grant told me to at the Saturn and no parade.
And you, you hobbled after us.
Yeah, I did. Hey, literally. Wow. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you for coming anyway.
Oh, no.
Well,
wouldn't miss it.
Bruce.
Wait a minute. Any police, anything?
Sergeant Arms says that they will be reviewing the tapes later to catch the criminal element, which apparently includes at least 200 people.
But, 200
walkers and drivers and bikers and
more than that here now.
Well, there are, but many of them were keeping a safe distance on the sidewalk.
No confrontations that you know of.
Oh, of course not. They would rather do it more quietly and discreetly.
He also said that he followed me when I got out of my car and been following me for 20 minutes.
Maybe he has a thing for you, Becky.
That's what I wondered. So Bruce, what do you think about the decision and Robert's case with the Ninth Circuit Court, 11-0?
Yeah.
And the case that they're talking about is the mock Nazi salute case where I, as I mentioned earlier in the show, raised my arm in a mock Nazi salute silently for about 2 seconds and was arrested for it when I refused to leave the council after a council member said it was disrespectful and that I had to leave.
Justice will out. Sometimes. Maybe.
Depends. It goes to trial next.
Yeah.
And a mere cost of $150,000 to the city. You can think of that.
It's terrible. It's ridiculous.
Come on. We've got to preserve decorum at city council. Right. Show some respect for the mayor, all right?
I did. It didn't take long.
Do you think it's a good idea for the city to settle at this point with Robert? Because he's willing to settle for $1.
And
a change in the rules of decorum.
Sure. If you're willing to settle for it.
That's what he said.
Are you?
I'm willing to settle, provided the attorneys get paid for all their time.
Yeah, attorneys.
And I want to see a change in the decorum rules. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, $1, attorney's fees, and a change in the decorum rules.
Well, I don't know about $1, but it's not going to be very much. It would be, be a small amount of money. I mean, I might want to pay for my dinner or something,
Dinner.
Yeah.
Sandwich to go or something.
But it would be a small sum, but I am willing to do that.
He wants to have dinner with you, Bruce.
Sure.
Well, Bruce and I are just good friends.
We love each other so much, I can see why you'd want that.
So how goes your... You do a weekly, or is it bi-weekly call?
Weekly. Well, I do a weekly interview show and then weekly movie review show on KZSC.
And you also have a column of your own on your blog.
Oh, yeah. 6 or 7 years now, yeah.
Now, give us the...
You're the original blogger.
The info for accessing your...
Blogging when no one was blogging.
How do we access your blog here, Bruce?
BrattonOnline.com. That's it.
Bratton
Online, all one word. BrattonOnline.com. And the radio program Universal Grapevine is Tuesday night, 7 to 8 o'clock, KZSC and 88.1 FM. Or you can hear it on your monitor on computers all over the world. Just go to KZSC.org.
Here, here. There you heard. I mean, here we are. And thank you, Bruce.
Yeah, top Parade Central here.
Yeah. Well, and thank you. Notice there are police officers on the corner in case you want to report any crimes.
Michael Betke right here, so you can't miss him.
Michael Betke keeping an eye on things to make sure the downtown is safe and secure.
Right.
And Becky.
The right wing of...
I suppose. I mean, remember, it's a whole new era with Hillary Bryant, David Cerezas, and Lynn Robinson leading the show.
Don't bring that up. Why'd you have to bring that up? That's the worst city council I've seen.
You call it the shitty council,
I think. At least, yeah. When you're on air, that's what you call it. But when you're off air.
You can stop into Lulu Carpenter's for a cup of coffee, though, if you like.
No. Too late in the day. I'll never go to sleep. Anyway, Happy New Year.
Police officer standing in front of the Velvet Underground. We have Sergeant Harm standing, he was standing up the road. We have a squad car parked at the head of Pacific Avenue. And we have a number of police officers and officials. Gosh, a veritable forest of blue up the street here. I better whip out my camera and try to take a photo of some of these folks. I guess Mike Bethke, the commercial guy, is doing a special thingy here. Let's see if we can get some photos.
Bethke is a sort of a figure to... It's my impression he supports repressive activity against homeless people downtown, and he's a kind of a Cynthia Matthews ally, but a nice enough fellow at City Council. It's just a different point of view from mine, for sure.
Smile, gentlemen.
Smile for everyone.
Well, I'm glad.
Just smiles for everyone. Still.
This damn camera doesn't work.
You don't have a digital recorder, and you don't have a digital camera. Killing me.
I'm trying to help our local CDS.
I like that you support the police with the police bear.
Well, I am. This is Eduardo, the police bear.
I love.
He is trying.
That's awesome.
Always. I'm still. I never met the. Well, I don't want to. I think I better move on.
Okay.
So down here in uniform, we have the actual head of the police department, Kevin Vogel. Only if my camera worked, wouldn't it be nice? Looking good tonight. Got a nice smile.
Great to see you. How's the world treating you?
Oh, you know how it is. Too many police officers doing the wrong kind of thing
Thanks
at the wrong time.
The bear there.
And that's Lieutenant Martinez, who's standing right next to Police Chief Kevin Vogel. And we were both standing in front of the bank at the corner of Pacific and Mission Street.
Well, that's Eduardo, the police bear. He's keeping an eye on you guys.
And I'm referring to the teddy bear I had on my, kind of belted on my bathrobe. I was wearing a bathrobe with covered with buttons and a teddy bear, which I do as a sort of a way of ironically commenting on the fact that homeless people have no place to sleep at night. And so I wander around in a bathrobe in solidarity.
I haven't really seen much on that. It's been a while, and I just haven't seen much activity for Cop Watch or anything like that.
Let's see, you got all the brass out here tonight, don't you?
Well, we all came together.
Well, I hope you should join in the celebration.
Oh, we are. We're kind of watching it from afar.
But we're talking with
Rick Martinez, Deputy Chief.
You're now Deputy. You've been promoted?
Been promoted.
Well, you certainly have the smile for the
job.
You
thought I was just pretty face.
You are certainly a pretty face. There's no question. We have certainly prettier than Captain Clark, but then again, that's a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
And we also have, of course, Mike Bethke, the unofficial police officer without a uniform. And there's Kevin Vogel, who's in blue. This is now scary.
I don't think Mr. Bethke can afford the pay cut, to be honest with you.
Really? Well, but I think he has the mentality for it.
Well, I don't know about that. There's some pretty strict hiring guidelines.
Well, it's possible.
It is.
I don't think you want to discriminate against business owners.
No, certainly not. I don't think he owns a business. I think he's working on a management job right now.
Really? I don't actually know what he's up to. I just know he's a frequent figure at city council meetings.
Yeah, he is out and about. Well, he lives right downtown, so he's really involved in a lot of the downtown issues. You know how it is.
Yeah, I think so.
It's good to see you. You enjoy your holiday.
You too, Rick.
Take care
of yourself. And remember, make sure that Azua gets punished for his abuse of Cynthia Kennedy. That wasn't a good thing that he did. Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
We're always watching.
Oh, Mr. Norris, how are you doing?
And Officer Azua was the one who brutalized, by her account, and by that of several other people, too, a woman named Cynthia Kennedy, this last spring in front of New Leaf Market. And I've talked about this on the air, and I've confronted Azua with it. He sort of smiled and ducked the issue.
Good to see you.
Is this a new shake?
Well, I don't want you to get a cold. I'm shaking hands with everybody in town, and I'm trying to be more.
And I'm now talking to Police Chief Kevin Vogel.
Health conscious.
Thank you.
Okay. Sure, appreciate that. It's a reasonable precaution. So, Kevin, how many cops are involved today in this observation of the actual event?
We never give up operational information like that. That's not something that we talk about in the media.
Well, how much does it cost? How's that? That's a fair question the taxpayer might ask.
How much does this event cost?
Yeah, at least in terms of police protection and such.
Oh, I wouldn't even hazard a guess. I mean, I'm sure it's in the thousands of dollars.
Sure, we'll tally it up at the end.
But I don't have that information handy.
Is it more than last year? Because I didn't see a lot of police last year.
It's about the same number of officers this year as it was last year. Halloween is a larger event for us than New Year's is, but it's roughly the same.
Well, I know there was a lot of publicity in the Sentinel. You initially issued a statement that, you perhaps deplored the fact that there wasn't a permit, but you didn't intend to stop the parade. But then Captain Clark was quoted as saying that people would be ticketed for walking in the parade. That was maybe it was a misquote by the Sentinel, but that's what they said in today's story.
No, our position all along has been that we will identify people and send a report to the city attorney's office and let the city attorney make a determination as to whether he will file charges or not against parade participants. It was never our intent to cite people for participating in the parade.
And that didn't happen last year either? That was a city attorney decision?
It was
charges
were filed after the fact last year.
Right. In your opinion, is that the likely outcome this year?
That's the way we're handling it this year, the same as we handled it last year. We will be documenting the incident and sending it over to the city attorney's office.
Now, as a professional observer, and you were observing last year, I imagine.
I was.
Does it seem significantly smaller to you than last year?
From where I'm standing right here, it's hard for me to gauge that. I didn't see the parade march up the avenue this year, so I don't know exactly how many participants there are. But
what's your guesstimate on numbers?
I think it's less. What do you think?
Less.
What do you think?
It looks less. Yeah. I'm guessing there's probably 100. What do you think?
I'd say more than that.
More than that?
Yeah. It looks peaceful. I was quoted in the Sentinel a couple weeks ago indicating that this parade's never gotten out of hand insofar as hasn't gotten rowdy, hasn't caused problems for us in that respect. It's just an unpermitted event. That's the problem with it.
Now, there's a much larger number of people that are due in about 3 or 4 hours.
A much larger number of people
on the New Year's,
celebration as they approach the town clock.
Oh, yeah.
That's also an unpermitted event, right?
Oh, it's a city-sponsored event.
It's a city-sponsored event.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why it's all fenced off. Fire does inspections. It's all fun.
Oh, that's interesting. So, in other words,
fireworks.
So people will not get tickets for walking in the street in this event, even if...
We actually close it. Yeah. It's all by council resolution.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I know that I looked at the resolutions. I didn't see anything, but there's a specific resolution that actually closes the streets and permits this event.
I'm not actually sure if the council approved the street closures, but street closures can be done in the city administratively. They don't need council approval. Mm-hmm. So there's...
Sure wasn't part of the safety enhancement zone?
I don't remember whether it was or not.
Does the safety...
And I have the safety enhancement resolution here from November 23rd, and it mentions that there's going to be a safety enhancement zone at certain times and certain places and covering certain ordinances, but does not state that the streets are going to be closed or that certain ordinances like parading without a permit, which is not part of the resolution, are going to be exempted because it's a city-sponsored or permitted event. Doesn't mention there's any kind of city permit. So I guess, in a way, Kevin Vogel, the police chief, finessed the question, or maybe just answered honestly to the best of his knowledge that, it was done administratively, by the behind-the-scenes, secret staff decisions, which actually is what runs most of the city most of the time, and in a way is so infuriating to many of us because it is... non-transparent, so opaque.
Enhancement zone, you may not know this, include 10.65, which is parading without a permit. Because I know it included open container, gets a triple fine, other kinds of offenses. But I don't know about this.
I don't have that information.
I don't either. I looked online, and apparently the city website doesn't have the resolution. Usually in the past, you were able to review the minutes, but it's not available now for some reason. So.
Yeah, I don't
know. Because the safety enhancement zone, I know, had to go before council again.
It did. It was item number 9 on the November 23rd agenda. Mm-hmm. But you can't see it on the website in terms of the substance of what specific code sections are ruled as triple fine worthy, if you will.
Yeah.
Anything you... Go ahead.
I'm thinking back about the resolution.
And we interrupt Police Chief Vogel to take the more important voice of the community. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Oh, so much for that. Let's get back to Chief Vogel.
For the safety enhancement zone, and I think Deputy Chief Martinez is correct. I believe that the street closures were addressed in the agenda report to council as well as in the resolution, if I recall correctly.
He doesn't recall correctly regarding the resolution. I have it in front of me. I'm looking over the agenda report right now to see it mentions New Year's Eve, traditionally draws a large crowd, downtown Santa Cruz, no formal event planned for downtown. Crowds upwards of 10,000 tend to congregate in the area. It's second only to Halloween for crowd levels downtown. Last year, approximately 12,000 people were downtown during New Year's Eve. The department made 25 arrests, including a felony warrant arrest and 16 alcohol-related arrests, and issued 32 citations. And I'm looking further about the safety enhancement zone, mentioning it in Spanish, and there's no mention of anything being closed. There's no mention of anything being permitted after a certain hour. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Al Fresky. Sorry, I missed you. Al Fresky here. How are you doing?
Good, good. You got some comments on what we're talking about?
Well, you know, I admire you, the work you do for the homeless, Santa Cruz.
Thanks.
And I was wondering if you'd like to do some business.
And what do you mean?
Well, you know, like some tours of like homeless people in Santa Cruz.
Tours?
Like tour of Heroin Highway.
The infamous so-called Heroin Highway,
I mean,
another
you know,
a publicity
you know all the
label.
Ins and outs, you know, don't you, sweetheart?
By the Heroin Highway, you mean the area up in the Poganip that.
Wait, you know it. I don't.
Hang on, caller. I don't know the Heroin Highway. Let's pause for a minute here. I know of reading of it through the Sentinel, which frankly is not the best source.
No, you call it Saint Anal.
What's that?
Saint Anal, you always call it, man.
I call it what?
Saint Anal.
Saint Anal?
Sentinel.
Oh, yeah, the Saint Anal. Yes, that's what I tend to call
no,
the
no,
Sentinel.
I'm wise, too. So
yeah,
called,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know,
so what's your question or your comment, caller?
Well, I'm making a business proposition. Like
You want me to do a survey of what the Saint Anal calls the Heroin Highway in the Poconos?
No. You're like, you do, you know, when the tourist season begins, like you'd be a guide.
Well, you know, we actually have done tours of the downtown where we go to places where homeless people have been beaten or harassed or discriminated against by businesses.
But you have to spruce it up. And, like, you have to have a featurette on your program called Homeless Heroes.
Homeless Heroes. Well, I try to talk about homeless heroes. You know,
but,
I mean,
you know,
we do discuss
them, you know, like
that.
Curb Hugger Chris and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I mean, and
Chris, to the homeless community. So
yeah.
You have to spruce it up.
Well, for sure. And I think that's a great idea, caller. In fact, I expect you to come forward and give us some nominations.
No. You have to do this.
No. You're a member. Caller, you're a member of the community. I need your input. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you line up the tour, you do the homeless heroes and all that, and then maybe we'll get somewhere. But where you are going now, you're just like a gerbil. You're just going round and round.
Well, I always can use correction, and I do feel sometimes a little confused. I got to tell you that.
Well, you're not confused. You are very clear about just going round and round.
Well, so, you know what they say. That's what happens every day. The sun goes around the earth. Or...
That's not right.
The earth goes around. Well, I'm not sure. It looks like the sun goes around the earth. You know what I mean?
No. It's Ryan Coonerty's.
Now, don't use the name of our mayor in vain, if you don't mind.
He has control of that, too.
Really?
You know, since you think that every evil that ever happened to humanity is due to him.
Well, not every. Let's not Now, let's not give Ryan too much credit here. Now, come on.
Oh, well, who then?
Well, I might consider that you might be the evil genius behind a lot of these problems.
Well, I am. But please.
All right. Well, that's an honest statement.
One person you should never reveal this to is the drum guy.
Drum Circle Dave.
No. He's the original crazy, and Curb Hugger Chris, and who's the Alien Vomit?
Alien Vomit. I've heard that name, but I don't quite place it. You know. Well, caller, let me get back to the New Year's Eve thing. Is there anything you want to say about that subject? Because that's really what we're covering right now.
No. I just want to say God bless America.
And may heavens be with Santa Cruz, because we're going to need the help.
No. Santa Cruz is no longer a part of the United States.
Oh, well, you don't bless
Santa Cruz? You are the one who seceded it.
That would be interesting.
Because of all this sheer talk.
Too much gerbling, eh?
Yeah. Now you are a part of Ecuador.
Well, you know what? There's Ecuador. I've never
to
Ecuador.
And Ryan Coonerty, he's a secret Ecuadorian.
Really?
Go and check up on this guy.
Well, I'm going to, you know,
an Ecuadorian passport.
We might want to bring this to city council in the future.
You know, Bookshop Santa Cruz in
but
the bag.
We're going to have to talk about this later, caller, because I'm running out of time. So I'll talk to you again. You take care.
I'm Alfred. Call me back.
All right. Take care, Alfred. And that was an interesting call from who knows who. Let's continue with some of these more interviews from the DIY. We were talking with Police Chief Kevin Vogel, who, if we're going to start to blame anybody, might as well blame the police chief, right? Well, certainly hold him accountable for how the police force acts and for how complaints against the police department go. And I know that I've inquired of him why homeless property is being left out in the rain behind the police department, and I haven't gotten an answer yet. But he is answering questions for the first time. This is actually the longest interview I've ever had with Kevin Vogel on a tape recorder, perhaps because there was a photographer right behind me who was with the mainstream media, but perhaps because he's feeling expansive and was having a good evening, or perhaps because he's going to be that kind of police chief. We'll see.
Yeah, I asked Councilmember Byer here today, but I guess she's out of town. I wasn't able to reach her about what she might have had the packet. Library is closed. It's not possible to find a copy of that resolution. And for those who are walking in the parade, it's important to know if they're going to be fined a small amount or a larger amount if the city attorney so chooses.
Yeah, I don't know if the participating in a parade is included in the triple fine.
Now, you've been an officer for...
found out that it is not included in the triple fine, but also we found out, at least looking at the wording of the resolution of November 23rd, that there is no mention of any permit being provided for the rest of the evening. So one wonders if there's such a huge safety concern for a parade of a couple hundred people, what they're going to do when 10,000 people hit the streets. And isn't this sort of a selective pressure against a small number of people who are considered politically undesirable? And I think that question kind of answers itself, because it seems clear that's exactly what's going on.
What, 3 decades now?
Not quite.
Well, you were there in 19... I got a ticket from you in 1988, I believe.
Put it this way, I'm working in my third decade now as a police officer, but I have not been a police officer for 3 decades.
Oh, very true. I remember you and Officer... You and Pruger roaming... Oh, of course. I mean, it looks stupid, but I'm not...
Pruger and I worked downtown together in 1988 as downtown officers.
I remember.
Got a great memory.
Well... I used to write about you in the Street Shit Sheet, actually.
I remember that also.
You know we're hiring.
I keep wanting to do a ride-along, but I don't. The police department may deny me that access, like Brent Adams was denied. You apparently give a discriminatory treatment to our people who want to do ride-alongs. Is that... perhaps the policy will change.
Previous arrests, usually.
Well, it's yeah. Based upon, yeah.
Well, I have been arrested for questionable behaviors at city council. Well, of course, there were no charges filed, but still, you know, it is...
Would the New York Times call it a pest?
I like what the Ninth Circuit said about Fitzmaurice throwing a hissing fit. That I like that one better, you know.
That's pretty good. Ninth Circuit's always good for quotes.
In this case, I have to agree. Here it looks like Captain Clark is getting on the air here. So, I know that the first night events sponsored by the city began in 1994, after the 93 situation where, as I've always described it, an inappropriate police decision by then Officer Sergeant Reedy, or perhaps it was now Sapone, drove people downtown into the Pacific area, creating a riot situation in the downtown when she tried to close the town clock early at 12:10 on New Year's Eve 1993. And then the next year, in order to prevent such a ruckus, we had a city-sponsored event. But before that...
Told you that memory.
Well... I wrote about it, and if you write about it, you may remember. And also, I keep talking about it because I don't want to see the police department used for nefarious political purposes. You see, that's my. I'm only working for you guys. I mean, who stood up and said, "Why are they cutting back police salaries?" I don't like big police, you know, buildings, but police officers. Well, perhaps not 90% at 50. I don't know about that, but that's another story. The Rotkin thing that was pushed through in 2000. It might eventually bankrupt the city, but nonetheless, you guys are going to have a little benefit from that eventually. But in previous...
Hey, how's it going?
I want to hear this.
Have you guys met, by the way?
No.
This is Kevin, and introduce yourself.
I'm Tiger.
Hi, Tiger.
Yep.
At this point, I'm introducing the police chief to a homeless woman who wants to be able to sleep under the awning of the bank, which has been closed down, or at least it's closed for the evening. And she's been told, she says, by a bank worker that it's okay if the police department says it's okay. And this is the discussion that follows.
Kevin is actually, I want to commend him, he's an accessible police chief. He's out here on the streets. He's talking with...
That may have been, I think, all the tape we have for... Yeah, that kind of ended it for, and it's too bad because the rest of the tape revealed how, I guess it wasn't so much Police Chief Vogel, it was Lieutenant Martinez who said, we're not going to tell you you can sleep there, even if they said you can. There's a no trespassing sign, which is interesting because if the city, if the actual property owner says, we don't mind if you sleep there, the no trespassing sign is irrelevant because they have permission to be there. So why Lieutenant Martinez would say that, except, and here's this a friendly guy with a big smile, and he's just the beamingest, sweetest guy you can ever imagine. And here's a person on a very cold night, and New Year's Eve, rainy too, although the rain didn't hit on that DIY night. It's a kind of an example of the kind of gross hypocrisy, or at least the kind of the jarring, what's the proper word, cognitive dissonance. I don't know what the, there certainly is a conflict between the smiley exterior and the underlying grim message. In the studio with me is that activist among activists, probably recovering from a number of bouts with not only bad luck but ill health, Linda LeMaster, who is, has at one time chaired the Homeless Issues Task Force. She's been on the, if not chaired, the Commission of Prevention of Violence Against Women. She's worked on the Continuum of Carelessness, or the 10-year plan to talk about ending homelessness without doing anything, as I like to call it. And she has her own website, Linda's Hearth, I believe. And Linda, you got some open mics if you want to talk in the last 8 minutes of this show. I know that you've been scurrying around trying to deal with a lot of issues, and good to have you in the studio. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thanks, Robert. Yeah, I don't have much scurry left in me, but the need to scurry continues unabated.
You're also a Peace Camp 2010 defendant. I believe you're going to trial on a misdemeanor charge of lodging, misdemeanor state lodging, meaning you were, I guess, sleeping or nodding out or lying down or leaning down. What's this lodging charge? Are you going to make a confession here on the mic? We can perhaps pass that on to the court. Go ahead.
Are you telling me to say something about it or to not say something about it?
I'm telling you to say whatever you feel like talking about. It's interesting. See, there's a conflict between the reporter in me and the legal guy in me. The reporter says, tell me the truth. And the legal guy says, shut up and don't say anything. But actually, in this situation, I don't know what to advise you. If you are completely homeless, and even if you weren't, you might have a necessity defense given, you know, as a disability. You're a disabled person.
Yeah, I think if the judge really cared what I was doing there when I'm in front of him.
And remind us of what you were doing. This is the Peace Camp 2010 protest against the sleeping ban this summer.
I was laying down, and I'm told I was asleep, but I felt like I was in some fuzzy zone between awake and asleep. And trying to keep an eye on a friend, Chris, who thought he had double pneumonia. And
the infamous curb hugger, Chris.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I was worried for him, and Coral, too, was there because of this. And he didn't see any way he could get the health care that he needs, and he's probably right. I looked into it later. So I was just kind of doing a death watch, life watch kind of thing.
This was at the county building?
Yes, on the plaza outside the courthouse, really.
And this is where they'd been for a month, creating a safe zone where people could actually sleep. There was a porta-potty there at night for people and so forth.
More than a month by the time I got a ticket. And then a handful of days after that, the people who remained switched over to the in front of the city hall. But so I was there that night, and other nights I was sleeping there, but in a vehicle, and the attention was focused on people gathered as part of this demonstration, not just people sleeping. So, but I was concerned for this new friend I'd made at Peace Camp, and so I was sleeping on the cement. It wasn't planned. I didn't have a blanket until Becky brought me one, and somebody else's jacket was my pillow at some point. I just didn't think it was safe to leave him there. So I got this ticket, and so now I have to go back to what I used to do, which is fighting things that are wrong with a system that tries to control our lives.
And with a court system that seems rather stacked in advance, although these are an embarrassing set of cases for the city and the county, I think, because I kind of hope, because there were, I think, over 40 misdemeanor lodging tickets given out. Yours was one of those tickets. Each of those, if the defendants have been well organized, if the protesters have been well organized, would require a jury trial and a public defender appointed. Unfortunately, you're the only person that I know of, other than Lee Nash, who got a public defender M. Z. Schwarzbach was his name, and he was found guilty after a brief trial. You're the only public defender. You only had one. And your public defender, Marcus Garvey, I ran into him in the courthouse, I guess, a couple days ago, and we smiled at each other as we passed by. But most of the defendants did not get public defenders. Most of them didn't even show up in court. They got failures to appear.
Yeah. I noticed a lot of them got batches of tickets dismissed along the way of dealing with other things like being drunk in public or having leftover warrants from other things. And in the consolidating thing the court did, it just kind of rigged it so people were eligible for Prop 36 and dismissed everything that was unrelated to that.
Hmm. Well, I know that
Frank Lopez is the example I first saw that, but I've heard about it for three more defendants. They're just thrown away. I think Crow had some of that going on.
Indeed. And
they're just hiding the crumbs.
For those who are interested, Crow and his partner, Red just had breast surgery, and she's still recovering, and we'll hope she's doing well. I did talk to her a couple days ago. She seemed to be in good spirits, although her time in the a motel room that she was given 3 days in after her surgery. She's back in her vehicle again, which isn't the best place for her to be with her puppy. And
it's not at all safe for recovering from surgery.
No, I wouldn't think so. But she's struggling
with it. Not to mention sleep or anything else.
I also want to mention in the last 2 or 3 minutes of this show that I did talk to Attorney Ed Fry, who is covering the Santa Cruz 6, or maybe they're the Santa Cruz 8, a number of defendants who you are with, certainly in spirit and in support of, Linda, although you have your own attorney. He's actually defending himself, Chris, Colette, Gary, Art, and I think a few other people as well.
What a relief.
And that's, well, I wish he'd gotten public defenders for each of them. I just don't see why that went down that way, and I just can't stop criticizing it, as much as I like Ed, and much as I've worked with him for a while. What he told me earlier today, we talked about this on the phone, was that there are 2 court dates coming up, and maybe you have another one you can tell us about. There is one coming up on the 21st. That's when he makes a general attack on the constitutionality of the lodging law. That's going to be in Department 2, 1:30 on a Friday, and that's a ways off, and I'll be able to announce that again. And then there is another court date coming up, Becky Johnson's appeal in her Don't Sing on the Sidewalk Woman case, or the Sinister Sidewalk Citation case. Mm-hmm. And that is January 13th. That's coming right up at 4 p.m. And that's her appeal, where she's appealing this case to a panel of 3 of the cronies of Judge Almquist. We'll see where that goes. Linda, you have about a minute left before this tall, imposing figure to your right pulls out his ale and begins to pour it all over us, or perhaps drink it all over us. That's Uncle Dennis.
You want it poured, Robert?
When it rains,
no,
it pours.
No, I want a few seconds. So the day after Becky's thing, I'm slated to go to court again to try to get a arraignment completed. This will be the third try on the 14th in the morning.
Okay. Now what court are you going to?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, keep in touch and let us know what's happening. An arraignment, of course, is something that generally I don't encourage people to go to because you just sit around all day until you make a plea and then you leave. But who knows?
I'm hoping the point of this and bothering with it is to try to challenge whether the law is even appropriately used.
Right, and I'm glad you're doing that, Linda. And I want to thank you for being, briefly on the show. And I'll remind
thank
people.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'll be at the Julian Assange Bradley Manning protest 1 o'clock on Saturday. And I hope I'll see you there. Maybe Uncle Dennis, you'll show
That's
up.
It's at the town clock.
That is correct. It is at the town clock, and they're going to be
planning on being there.
And you are amazing. Yeah. And congratulations.
I think every liberal pink winger in Santa Cruz ought to be there.
Even some of the yellow bellies should show up. And anybody who wants to be able to use the internet, anybody who wants to be able to be a journalist.
Well, I think Republicans ought to show up. They've been reading the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution the last few days, and
it's about time.
That's correct.
They ought to understand understand what freedom of speech and the press is all about.
It would be nice if they did. And, we'll, of course, none of these politicians on either side seem to understand what's going on. But we're going to try to educate them. That's 1 o'clock on Saturday at the Town Clock. Free Julian Assange and Bradley Manning. And you'll probably be hearing more about it on Louis LaFortune Show, maybe on your show, Dennis, I don't know.
Let Freedom Keyboard.
Maybe not. Anyway, thanks for being with me on the station of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 with more interviews. Actually, I think we finished off, well, not quite, DIY. Unfortunately, my tape ran out on Chief Vogel at a sad moment. It could have gotten more interesting.
Well, if you had a digital recorder, you would not have run out of tape,
Uncle
Robert.
Dennis, you always have a kindly word for me. And actually, a very educational word. A natura word has not been spoken, or probably it has, but we won't get into that at this time. Anyway, thanks for being with me in this edition of Bachelor.
I have it on good authority that you were actually given a digital recorder.
Perhaps I may have mislaid it along with the memory of a digital recorder. I did get a digital recorder briefly, but it was one I didn't know how to use. It was actually used by somebody else at the last homelessness marathon, which, by the way, is coming up again. For those of you who like the 14-hour-long homelessness marathon, happens every year. This one's going to be from Kansas City. We have a caller. I'm about to leave, but let's see who the caller is. Hey, caller, you're on free radio. About to leave. What's up?
Hello?
Hello?
Who am I speaking to?
Hello?
Yes, who am I speaking to?
You are still speaking to Robert, Mr. Caller.
Well, I'm Alfred.
Oh, I recognize
his voice.
You do. Well, I'm going to turn you over to Uncle Dennis, caller, and thanks again, and I'll be back on Sunday morning.
Are you going to have a heroin highway tour?
Dennis is going to have an ale tour. Maybe that'll help what ails you.
We
have a heroin hill, but we don't have a heroin tour. You might talk to the people that run the buses around town to see if they want to drive up there.
Now, is Ryan Coonerty actually an Ecuadorian?
No, we haven't been able to find Ryan Coonerty's birth certificate.
No, he is. In the back of Bookshop Dan Cruz, he has all the Ecuadorian books, and he's an illegal alien. And he's bleeding Santa Cruz dry, and Robert North, this hero, has been trying to warn you all these years.
And I know whose voice this is. I recognize your voice, sir. As a longtime caller from West Los Angeles. Yes?
Well, you know, isn't Ryan Coonerty an Ecuadorian?
I have, like I said, we've been unable to locate his birth certificate.
Well,
so he may have been born.
I am the only one in the whole world who has become a Ryan Coonerty birther. He's an Indonesian, and this Robert North.